This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana on D-Day, 80 years after that historic day that changed the course of World War II. We have a museum in New Orleans. It's now the World War II Museum, but it started as the D-Day Museum. And General Russell Honoré, General Russell Luke Honoré, who served our country with distinction from the Vietnam era until 2008, 37 years. He's with us, the pride of Lakeland, Louisiana, U.S. Army, 2nd Infantry Division. And he saw action in Desert Storm, came in at the end of Vietnam. And I am always amazed at his recollection of history going back to the beginning of this country. He knows a lot about George Washington. And he also knows a lot about what happened in Normandy in 1944 on the 6th day of June. One of those present was Johnny Jones, one of the real great Baton Rougeans. And the irony was that he fought for his country and risked his life and was lucky to survive on 6th June 1944, then came home and couldn't even have lunch at a downtown eatery because of the practices of the time. And there is another gentleman, I am told, who is still living, and there aren't many left of the D-Day event, but one is living in Denham Springs, and he's 99 years old, and his name is Tolly Fletcher, and wow. We commend him for his service. But General Honoré, that was supposedly the turning point. Hitler had one last gasp with the Battle of the Bulge, but if not for D-Day, who knows what would have happened, but those men risked their, and we're talking men in this case, they risked their lives, and many of them gave their lives on that date 80 years ago today.
Yes, it's a solemn day in our history. 80 years ago, thousands of them rushed the beaches in France to turn the tide on fascism, which was taking over Europe by gunfire and kinetic wars, invasion of other countries, persecution of people because of their religion and the way they looked, actually gassing them and killing them, all inspired by a leader who thought he had a greater vision for the world, authoritarianism and fascism. The open degradation of people based on their religion. This is a reminder of the sacrifice that those members of the armed forces, because all branches were involved. The Air Force was still part of the Army back then. But if you hadn't done so, don't miss the opportunity while you can still travel and go see the World War II Museum. They do a great job telling that story. For all branches of services that represent 9,000 casualties. It's great to see the veterans there today, and many of them have gone to visit their battle buddies who never made it home because they were buried in Europe. One of the great lines from Colin Powell, when we came to Europe, we came to reinstitute democracy and end fascism. And we asked them for nothing. We created a Marshall Plan and rebuilt Europe. All we asked them for was a place to bury our dead. We didn't ask for the art. We didn't ask for the fine wines and champagnes and take over their country. We asked for one thing, to bury a place to bury our dead. And with all due respect, the French and the Netherlands, two of the biggest armed forces, cemeteries overseas, they have done a great job in taking care of our veterans, those that died and never made it home. They remain in Europe. And all we asked them for was a place to bury our dead. We didn't ask them for anything else. It was no quid pro quo. And today, those same countries, we enjoy a very prosperous relationship under the guise of NATO. And that's being challenged today.
Your number for General Honoré is 877-217-5757, and a reminder that signature support for our program is from the East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Again, 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org. Now, the person who led the invasion 80 years ago was Dwight David Eisenhower, pride of Denison, Texas, who later became U.S. president. In the next decade, he served two terms with Richard Nixon as his vice president. And it was because of the World War II Museum many years ago when it first opened. They had a film of what happened, and the weather was bad. And so I delayed it a day, and then it was still bad the second day.
Yeah.
And he was asked to pull back, that they were on to them, and it would be devastating to go in bad weather, and it would be devastating to wait another day. You can imagine what it would be like today with cell phones and that sort. You couldn't keep something like this under wraps, but he made the call.
Yeah. You know, I'm wearing First Army gear today because I was the 33rd commander in First Army. But the commander, Army commander on the beach that day was a guy named Omar Bradley. And Bradley landed on the beach. He didn't command his army from a cell like we see in Iraq and Afghanistan, with no disrespect for doing it. He was on the beach with his troops. And some historians have recorded the death he saw when he landed was so devastating to him, he tried to call Eisenhower and call off the landing in the middle of it. But his radio didn't work. And thank God for one time the radio didn't work, because the men continued to attack. And we know the rest of the story. And the first commander of First Army was Black Jack Pershing. I was the 33rd commander. So it gave me great pride to have walked in their shoes and sat at their desk. But the sacrifice that day is beyond most people's vision of 9,000 casualties. That's more than we lost in Iraq and Afghanistan over 20 years. 9,000 in one battle, and they're all buried in Europe.
Do we have that same kind of patriotic fervor today?
I think we do.
It's deep down.
It's deep down. It's a bifurcated. It's confusing, because you remember a lot of these people in World War II, they communicated by mail. Sometime the mail got through, sometime it didn't get through. My father-in-law often tells the story, he was in the Pacific, that he was there for 3 years, and he can't ever remember getting a letter. I mean, they were just literally gone. There were no calls home, there were no internet, there was no way of communicating, and the reporters filed their report if they were able to keep up with the troops. So that story has been well told. And if you hadn't watched Private Ryan, take your grandkids and sit down with them this weekend and watch Private Ryan, because it is the closest replica of what happened on D-Day to our soldiers, sailors, airmen, mm-hmm. and Marines.
And there were other battles. Perhaps not as profound, but you mentioned the number of casualties. The United States lost, I think, about 50,000 men in the Battle of the Bulge, which was 5 weeks.
Absolutely. Surrounded. And that's when the commander of the 101st, who was surrounded, and his famous words when he was asked to surrender, said, "Nuts." And he told his men, "Now we can fire in any direction." Mm-hmm. We got them. They got us surrounded. Mm-hmm. And that's when Patton's army, which had landed then, went in and relieved them at the Battle of the Bulge.
And my dad was in that group.
Wow.
But the strategist given credit for devising a way for the U.S. to get out of a bad spot was General Troy Middleton.
Yep. Absolutely. And he was a hero of World War II.
It's tragic what's been done to his memory.
Absolutely. He was a hero of World War II, and somehow we got to continue to give credit to what he did that was historic during that battle. He was Eisenhower's man.
And he also fought, a listener notes, in World War I. So
yeah.
There aren't many that could say that, but if you were born at the right time and you stayed in, just like there aren't many who were at the end of Vietnam and also in Desert Storm, but Russell Lucanare was. And your life is defined by your military service.
Absolutely. That and being a father, but being a soldier was my life, and I would have done it all my life. But it's time to step off because that's a young person's game.
Yeah, if anything is, that's a young person's game. But I was 8 when my father died, but as bad as war is, and he was in World War II in Korea, after that, life is pretty mundane. You're never going to be as electric as you are when you're fighting for your life and the life of others and the salvation of your country.
Well, I read the stories of two of my heroes, Pershing and Bradley, and both of them, after they completed the service, they were advocates for the Red Cross, and they went around the country, and I'm an advocate for the Red Cross. I've tried to walk in the shoes.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. General Russell Honoré appropriately with us on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. The President of the United States is in France today. And now, Joe Biden is a great patriot. And I'll give Donald Trump his due. I'm sure in his own way he has to love America. America's been pretty good to him. But both of those gentlemen took a powder in Vietnam, got doctor's excuses to stay out of the war, and some of us believe by virtue of that they should be disqualified from being president of the United States. But we've had them both, and one of them will win again. And General Russell Honoré walked the walk and talked the talk. And warfare has changed immensely. It was dangerous then, but now as George Will wrote the other day in his column, in 2 hours, the earth could be obliterated. How does that change the world as we know it?
Well, the world as we know it, we do things quicker, which means we can make mistakes quicker and have an unintentional consequence of a mutual annihilation between us and the Russians or the Chinese through miscalculation. While we live in dangerous times, Jim, tell me a time in history when we were not in dangerous times. Tell me a time in history going back to the Revolutionary War when Washington crossed the Delaware, 50% of his army gone because of illness in AWOL, fighting the British, attacked on Christmas, saved the battle, killed or captured over 900 British or mercenaries that night, and kept the war going after our capital, New York, had been burned and one in Philadelphia was threatened. Tell me a time in history when we go skip forward to the Civil War, when our nation was divided over the concept of slavery, where in that Civil War, over 175 black regiments fought. Never taught in the history that I learned while I was in the Army. 175 black regiments, people who were former slaves, joined the Union Army to fight for freedom of this country. The war is over, we get emancipation of the population, and the courts say, well, maybe not so. Maybe not so. And we know how many years it took for people of color to get the right to vote. Tell me when it wasn't in turmoil, when women fought for over 20 years marching the street for the right to vote. Tell me when we're not in turmoil, when we went from World War I to World War II, and fascism killing millions of Jews. Tell me we were not in turmoil in the in the 60s when Thurgood Marshall put forward and integrate the schools. Tell me we're not in turmoil in Vietnam when our men came back and women came back and they were spit on the streets of America. Not because of what they did, but because of the policy of the nation to fight the Vietnam War. Every generation has to fight a war to save this democracy. What we're asking of the young generation today, 8 million Gen Xers, first-time voters, they could determine this next election. And we're not asking them to attack the beaches of Normandy. We're asking them to attack the ballot box and go vote and take somebody with you to save democracy, because that's what's on the line. Every generation is faced with a war to fight. The other war the young people got to fight is the war to save Mother Earth. We're going through the first big heat wave of the year. And if you think this summer is hot, next summer is going to be hotter because our stubbornness to change in what we're doing to warm the earth, which affects the Weather Channel and a hot Gulf and a very heavy hurricane season that's coming. This generation now, they've got to vote, and we're going to have to do a cultural shift away from plastics and fossil fuels because we are burning up the earth. And it's evident heat will be the number one killer of people from disasters as we go forward. As it was last year, it will be this year globally. And we, this generation, their war, World War III, is how they saved the earth and how they saved democracy. Thank you for allowing me that long response.
Those words should be said by every public official in high places, but instead we talk about transgender bathrooms and things like that. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
General, you're a great American. It's an honor to have an audience with you. It was said recently on one of the right-wing cable channels, the only African-Americans who saw combat in Europe in World War II was in Italy. And no one knows this about history. The 333rd Field Artillery Battalion fought at the Battle of the Bulge. It was entirely made up of African-American United States soldiers. They took heavy, heavy casualties because that's where the enemy aims their fire, at the artillery. Many were captured by the Germans. Many were tortured, murdered, died of disease and starvation in German prisoner camps, and only a few made it back to the United States. And furthermore, the battalion in World War II that took the most casualties were awarded numerous medals of honor. They were feared by the Germans, and that battalion was made up entirely of Japanese-American soldiers.
All right. That was a dark stain on America's history, but... And I've commented that my father and his brother fought in World War II, and they were first-generation German-Americans, and there was no doubt whose side they were on.
Yeah.
But yet we put Japanese people in prison and took their property and punished them for something they were not a part of.
That war has been written about more than any of them, and movies have been made about it. And it didn't portray the full spectrum of those who served and those who went on the beaches. And thank you for bringing up that the 333rd. There were other, there was a tank battalion, the Panthers, that a recent movie is made about. There's a recent movie being made about the 888 mail unit, all black women who moved the mail for World War through, tons of it a day. And that movie is about to come out. But the story is being told, but we've missed two generations of telling the whole sacrifice of everybody who participated in World War II. And the old story would be with the World War II guy, what wave were you on? Because that made a difference.
Certainly it did.
And but that story was untold. Thank you for bringing that up.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Hi, Patricia. You're on with the general.
Good morning, General Honoré. CNN recently had a thing about you and your soldiers saving two babies during Katrina, and they have just graduated from high school. And so I really thank you for that. But my question is, what is the significance of Sweden and Finland joining NATO?
Well, Sweden and Finland have been on the edge of NATO, and for many reasons, they had not been motivated to join NATO until the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It motivated them, and it motivated NATO partners, because while they had talked about that for some time, they were reluctant to add Finland and NATO because of their proximity to Russia. This was a great move under the leadership of President Biden and our NATO partners to include Finland and Sweden inside of NATO. But that was a long struggle, and as you saw, it took almost a year and a half to get everybody to buy in because of the threat of what trade impact it might have with Russia and what retribution Putin would try to impose on those for allowing those two countries into NATO. I think that was a great outcome of a very sad, storied war where our Congress upheld funding for Ukraine 6 months caused untold number of deaths and loss of land in Ukraine to the Russian army because they were able to press an offensive because Ukraine was running out of ammunition. That problem has been fixed. President Biden and the Congress under Mike Johnson eventually passed that, but that six-month gap caused a lot of deaths in Ukraine.
Quickly, we're about to go to a break, but the Katrina babies, the CNN feature, a lot of response from that, I'm sure.
It was overwhelming. My email lit up, and I heard back from CNN, one of the biggest stories they had viewership on globally in the last recent months.
And one of them is in the military, right?
He's joining the Marines. He's going to be a hoorah Marine. And the other one's going to be an auto engineer. So one will save our democracy, and the other one will help save our climate to create technology that helps cool the world.
We'll be back with General Honoré. Stay tight if you're on the line, and we'll return after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, and we'll get a report from the Green Army leader as well. But right now, as you've heard, General Russell Luke Honoré speaking as a veteran of warfare, and today marks probably the most significant day of warfare in our country's long history. Now, there have been others, and the general recited them. What Washington did, there weren't cameras and microphones, but it was pretty profound, to say the least. But this is a date that we should never forget, and never forget those who sacrificed, and some of whom made the ultimate sacrifice on June 6, 1944. 877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with the general. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, General. Could Trump's popularity with some 40% of the citizenry be attributable to the demise of civic studies in elementary and secondary school?
That's quite possible. But I think the attribution is the in what creates that 30 or 40% the popularity among his followers is a shared, almost cult-type following that supersedes the Constitution. That's what scares me. It's, I think people know better, but they're inspired by this idea of fewer taxes, fewer regulations, no regard for science, and hell-bent, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer under that concept. But it could be attributed to that. You know, when we came up with the focuses on STEM as the savior of the world and the degradation in the arts and humanities, and we miss having public health people in schools, all that I think attributed to a challenge we have today to overcome that, and an appreciation for science was degraded during that period in making decisions, because over half of the U.S. Senate still don't believe in climate change. They don't believe in global warming. They think it's just cyclic and it's not being caused by man, where over 95% of the world's scientists and informed scholars as said, attributed to man-made pollution that's causing global warming. But I do think it's an attributing factor. Learning how government work and the significance of it and experiencing the big social change and social justice movement in the 60s gave my generation a real good understanding of it when we saw the changes that were made with the integration of schools and the ending of separate but equal. Today, people assume that's younger people can assume it's always was that way. They can go anywhere, compete for any job, and be a part of the economy. It wasn't always that way. And now, many of them I hear, well, I'm not going to vote in the next election because I didn't get what I want the last time.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with General Honoré. Hello, James.
Well, good morning to you, Jim, and good morning, General Honoré. And, sir, thank you for your many, many years of distinguished service to the defense of our country. A comment and then a question. The MAGA mob doesn't seem to be able to avoid making anything political. For example, this morning, a right-wing influencer said climate change is a hoax and a lie, and that we would never have won World War II without fossil fuels. My God, that was 80 years ago. My question to you is this. Back in 2018, it's alleged that Donald Trump did not want to visit a cemetery, a visit over in Europe, claiming that the cemetery was filled with losers. General, you know, you have connections in the military. How much credibility do you put into those claims?
Well, I tell you, thanks for bringing those 2 points up. But to speak to how the oil and gas industry, and I use gas to come in my car, so every finger you point, just 3 point back in, how they have hijacked our democracy to keep this a lingering thesis around that the world cannot survive without oil and gas. They have kept that up and they've continued to feed that narrative. And it's on television every day on certain mostly conservative stations, this degradation of the idea of the impact of climate change and that it's man-made. So thanks for bringing those points up.
How did the Green Army do this session?
Well, we fought a good fight. And anytime you go into the legislature and you're talking about holding oil and gas accountable and petrochemical industry accountable, we hired a lot of, we allowed a lot of employment in Baton Rouge because industry hired hundreds of lobbyists and consultants to counter the things that we were trying to support, like saving the aquifer. They probably had 10 or 12 lobbyists they had to hire because of the bill that was going through on the aquifer to provide metering as directed by the Capital Area Groundwater Commission and as was fervently fought by the water company, Baton Rouge Water Company, and Exxon Lobby and the Louisiana Chemical Association. They put a lot of effort in that bill to stop the Capital Area Groundwater Commission from providing metering on all the wells that's that it served. So that was a big fight, and the industry won. But the war is not over because the people of Baton Rouge know and they care about the aquifer. We just got to get people in Baton Rouge and the five surrounding parishes more socially active in what the hell's going on with that aquifer, because the Baton Rouge Water Company and Exxon is okay with us drinking river water. I'm going to say it one more time. They are okay with us drinking river water as opposed to using the aquifer. And that is the bottom line, that the next generation of our grandkids will probably be drinking river water because Exxon and the Chemical Association believe it's okay for them to use the aquifer water as opposed to river water and save our aquifer for future generations.
Final caller for General Honoré, Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on the air with the general.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Jim. General, as always, our words are inadequate to thank you and yours who served, and to the audience, good morning. General, what are your thoughts on white supremacists who feel that if immigration continues on the trajectory that it's on, that 20, 30 years from now, they may be in the minority, and this is why they love Trump and his ism and shutting down the border and blah, blah, blah.
Is this about race?
Some of it is. We saw it manifest itself in the Civil War. We saw it manifest itself in Reconstruction with the White League in New Orleans, overtaking the city after Reconstruction and putting all those federal monuments up, and we saw it in during the era of Jim Crow.
Well,
but it is a cancer in our political system that had been proliferated by such as stupid Tucker Carlson and stupid Hannity, and proliferated this idea that there's a replacement theory that people will be replaced by black and brown people. By 2050, our demographics will change. And many of them see this as a loss of power. Listening to them speak that this is one of the biggest issues facing America, and it's not. What's the biggest issue facing America is to retain our democracy and keep the world from burning up through global warming. That's the two issues that's driving, that should be the biggest issues on people's mind. We got 11 cities now, major cities with water problems, to include Mexico. We've got to deal with these issues of climate change, and we got to deal with this festering attitude that there's a replacement theory, that people are going to be replaced.
Well, General, thank you for your service and for your goodwill in coming on our show. And he's given me a lapel button, too. Thank you. And you say, who gave you this?
Speaker Emeritus Nancy Pelosi.
Gave it to you, and he gave it to me. And it says, Liberation of France, Embassy of France in the U.S., 1944 to 2024. Thank you, General.
Have a good day. Watch Power Red Ryan with your kids.
1998. It's held up well, and Tom Hanks is the best. And thank God for him and the D-Day Museum and Stephen Ambrose.
Yeah, oh, Ambrose was great. And to the family of Richard Schlusslag and Smiley, we lost two good ones in this last week. And condolences to their family and friends and colleagues. They both made a significant difference in the history of Louisiana.
Yep. And Mark Ballard is with us, a fine man himself who's made a significant contribution, as did his late wife, Donna. And Mark, being the journalistic trooper that he is, I still recall the day she died. He came on this show, and Mark is with us almost every Thursday. And since we last joined you, the former president was convicted on 34 counts. The jury had 408 opportunities to say not guilty, and all 12 said guilty 34 times, Mark. But in the world of politics, what's your early read?
Well, the early read is that the Republican base is using these convictions as a way to motivate and energize their voters. They're arguing, and this includes House Speaker Mike Johnson of Benton, who is saying that the convictions show a weaponization of the legal system in the United States.
Well, we will see how this will play. And mind you, the election is 145 days away. So we're getting closer and closer, and Mark will be with us, hopefully until the very end and beyond. What a next 4 years it'll be, no matter who wins, and we'll talk more about that when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and Mark Ballard here for his weekly visit, joining us from Washington, D.C., where at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right now, the resident is Joseph Robinette Biden, Jr. His son is on trial in Delaware on a weapons charge, accused of lying while he had a weapon for a few weeks, 11 days actually, and the evidence appears to be pretty compelling as to whether that constitutes a crime that will put him in jail. I don't know, but he could get 25 years. And former President Donald John Trump could get 4 years for... It's not because he consorted with Stormy Daniels, which appears to be almost certainly the case, but because he used extravagant methods to hide it from the American people while he was running for president. And the reason he wanted to hide it was primarily because he knew it would cost him the election. This would have been right on the heels of the Access Hollywood tape. And those who have made a case that Donald Trump was a disaster, make the plausible case that if not for the concealment of the relationship with Stormy Daniels, Donald Trump would not have been president, and he would not have put three highly conservative Supreme Court justices on the high court. And that's the reason that, number one, Roe v. Wade was overturned. So, as we know, sometimes one thing leads to another and another and another, and this was a big thing, Mark. It It enabled him to get some breathing room because the American people would not have been ready, in my view, to accept another bombshell about Trump when he was on the ropes in October of 2016.
Yeah, I think politically that you've kind of called it correctly, that this was a this was necessary for him to get past that Access Hollywood tape and all of the thoughts that that brought up. Also playing a role in that, we can't forget, was the release of the emails from the Hillary Clinton server that kind of took the conversation and sent it in a different direction. So, but yes, I mean, that is. Now, will it have an impact on the base? And I think the answer is no, it won't. It may even energize them a little bit, but it is seemingly having an impact on the edges. And in some of these very close races in, I guess, the seven swing states, that it could have play a role in whether they go out to vote or whether they change their vote to Joe Biden.
Well, the people who follow this closely say that unless something really cataclysmic happens to either campaign, that 43 states are settled. We know who's going to win. And we know Donald right. Trump's going to win Louisiana. But the seven in play are Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And there is a slight prospect, but it is a prospect, that Joe Biden could actually win this race and get fewer votes than Donald Trump. Now, some would say that's turnabout fair play, but that's a flaw in our system. I don't think anybody who gets fewer votes should be president. I think Hillary Clinton should have won in 2016, but Donald Trump won in the Electoral College. That's the way we decide elections. But we don't have the best system of, in any way, shape, or form of electing our president, do we?
Well, now I would push back on that a little bit, in that this system was brought about by the founding fathers, who were trying to balance the small states and the larger states. The smaller states, the more numerous smaller states, were arguing that Virginia, Pennsylvania, and New York would be deciding all presidential elections from here on out, because by virtue of the fact that their populations. And so they came up with this sort of balance by using the Electoral College that would allow a more equal voice from the smaller states.
But as we have it now, the smaller states get a more than equal voice. Louisiana, for example, has more population than Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, and I believe Montana put together. And collectively, those states have 12 electoral votes, and Louisiana has 8. So you can see how this is a situation in which the small states get inordinate representation. And it's the same way in the U.S. House of Representatives, which I think is also unfair, but that's the way it is until further notice.
Well, that is the way they kind of set it up that way. And let's remember, though, that Louisiana has fewer people than the city of Houston.
Yeah, and really, a listener points out accurately that it's more of a problem in the Senate than it is in the House. The House does try proportionately to elect people based on population, but if you've got a really small state, for example, Wyoming has fewer residents than the city of Baton Rouge, the metro area of Baton Rouge, but it has a U.S. House seat, and Baton Rouge, as we know, really doesn't. We're carved up. But in the Senate, Wyoming has 2 senators, and California has 2. So there's something wrong potentially with that picture, some of us would say. Now, we do have some folks waiting to talk with Mark, and we want to slide them in as we approach the finish line. There is still time to get in if you'd like to. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Mark.
Hey, I disagree. Wyoming also has a lot more land than the city of Baton Rouge. But let me get to my question.
Land?
Yeah. A lot more land. I mean,
Alaska. Alaska, I still think is a big. Alaska then should be the most powerful state in America. It's got more land than any state. They got 3 electoral votes.
I support the electoral system. It makes a lot of sense to me, but I don't know why you have a problem with it. But anyway, let me get to my question. The 34 counts against Trump, that's basically the same. All 34 are basically the same thing. Basically, he paid a legal expense to his lawyer to pay hush money. I'm trying to figure out. So all 34 counts are basically the same count, right? That's my question.
No, but most of them are many of them are. But Mark probably knows more than I. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, as would be with any prosecution, federal or state, is that each individual instance is a count. And it would be if you were selling drugs in Louisiana, each time you sold it would be an individual count. And it's an individual count in this case as well. And that's what he was
right, but there were 14 payments, and they're 34.
But it's not the payments that were the payments were, but it was the falsification of the business records.
I got you.
That was where the crime was, and there were 34 falsifications.
Well, and for those who say this was a witch hunt against Trump, inspired by the president of the United States, well, this was in state court. But Joe Biden has nothing to do with what happens in Manhattan courtrooms. His own son is on trial, and it's his Justice Department doing it. It was Trump's Justice Department that went after Michael Cohen for the same offense that Donald Trump had. He got 3 years, by the way, 3 years in the slam. He got out early because of COVID. And it just makes no sense to say that this is an attempt to injure Donald Trump. This was done independently of the Democrat who's in the White House, Mark.
There's been no evidence whatsoever, despite the fact that they repeat it quite often. There has been no evidence that the U.S. Department of Justice had anything to do with what happened in Manhattan. There's just been no evidence. And the other thing that we should also point out is that in addition to Hunter Biden being prosecuted in Delaware, he's about to start a trial in California on taxes. Again, something pushed by the Department of Justice under his father. And then at the same time, this Department of Justice is prosecuting right now a Democratic senator from New Jersey. To me, the kind of rings a little hollow that this was all, you know, politically motivated.
But they're saying it over and over, and the people in the Louisiana delegation are doing it too.
It's politics, and that's what's going on. They're trying to build and energize the base, and to kind of minimize the impact of having a candidate who's been convicted on 34 counts. Most of which are felonies.
All right, a listener says the same thing happened earlier this week with Anthony Fauci, who testified before a committee, and you would have thought this guy was the devil incarnate based on the people like Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, that was an entertaining hearing, to say the least, and I think that Fauci held his own in all of that. But And Marjorie Taylor Greene was kept going after him, saying that he ought to be thrown in prison and that he didn't deserve to be called a doctor. It was just, you know, well, it was a wild hearing,
well,
to say the least.
But it's an alternate.
And the same thing happened with Merrick Garland, I guess yesterday or day before. All my days are starting to run together now. But they also went after Merrick Garland over a lot of this weaponization business, and he held his own against a lot of allegations that do not really have support in evidence.
But that look on the face of Garland and Fauci, obviously they were taken aback by these allegations. These people need to punch back. That's the only way they're going to get attention in this country right now, is to say something just as flamboyant. And I suspect they could say some true things that were pretty flamboyant. And that's the best kind of flamboyance, is the truth. But Mark, we're in an alternate reality. We may not be in an alternate fact universe, but we're definitely in an alternate reality. And we're glad you're on the Odyssey with us, Mark Ballard, the man in the Beltway. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.